Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos. Or you can send to me at by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. This is episode number 40. Been answering a lot of questions and having a great time doing it. You guys keep them coming in and I will keep answering them for you. I also, speaking of answering questions, I did an Ask Me Anything, an AMA, on Reddit last week, and I was really blown away by the results. I was madly typing away answers to questions for 3.5 straight hours, and they kept coming in, and so I've answered a few more after that, but wow. And apparently, this AMA made it to the front page of Reddit the first day after it was out and got 65,000 views or something. I wasn't really tracking with that. Somebody else said that, but anyway, that was really fun, and I'm glad that there's so much interest on this. So let's get to your questions for this week. Rai D. I have a question about the concept of God in Scientology. I've heard you say before in one of the lectures on your channel that Scientology doesn't have any concept of God, so day-to-day worship for the lay Scientologist takes the form of reading LRH's materials. However, on the Scientology website, they make reference to God as the supreme being, the relationship to which constitutes the eighth dynamic. It also has an LRH quotation saying that people who have some concept of a god are morally superior people. Obviously, the concept of God in Scientology is not emphasized, and from the website, seems to be little more than a bit of PR to make Scientology look more like a mainstream religion. However, it does appear the LRH discussed it somewhat. Can you talk a bit about what God is in Scientology, what God means in Scientology, what LRH said about God in greater detail? Sure, and I don't know that I meant to express, if I did in an earlier talk about this, that there's no concept of God in Scientology, because that's not true. There is. There is this thing called the eighth dynamic, and it is of the dynamics in life, you know, starting from the individual, family, group, mankind, animals, and all life forms, matter, energy, space, time, spirits, and then the eighth dynamic, which is God or infinity, right? Or the allness of all. That's the ever-expanding series of dynamics or life in Scientology. And so the eighth dynamic receives the least amount of attention in Scientology. As a religious concept, God is sort of this idea of a creator or a maker or the infinity of things. And Hubbard doesn't really say a lot about him. He does get down on the Christian concept of God in a few places. There was one thing that comes to mind immediately is a lecture he gave called Scientology and Effective Knowledge. This was, I think, in 1955 or 56. And in that lecture, he talks about people sending their prayers up to a myth, and that the whole idea of there being like some Christian God is sort of just, you know, a construct of mankind. But he also says in other places that he never said he was an atheist, or he never said that there was no God, or anything like that. But he trounces the idea of a big, you know, bearded guy up in heaven sort of thing. And in fact, goes into the fact that heaven and Christian and Catholic ideas of God and angels and devils and all of that sort of thing are all the result of implants, mental implants that were done on all of us millions and millions of years ago. One is part of the whole Xenu incident, and also in other places he talks about this. He talks about a whole track, an old, you know, galactic civilization called Heliotropis, and how there were implants of heaven and implants of religious nature, you know, put into beings, into people, and that those ideas have carried forward to present time, and that and any Scientologist who knows this material would tend to tell you that, you know, the mess, the soup of religions on this planet are a result of all of these implants and these crazy ideas that people have had that were all put there as a control mechanism, Right? So that's religion. Now, that's not necessarily all there is to religion or to the idea of God. So you could sort of, you know, split these two things apart and go, okay, there's all this craziness of religion, organized religion, and religion is a control mechanism. And then there's actually this idea of a creator or of God. And I, you know, that these two things don't have to be meshed together. Right? And you could have all this horrible nonsense going on with religion over here, and you could still have a creator or a God figure. And that's the part Hubbard doesn't really talk about very much in terms of how that's addressed in Scientology. The other term he uses is big being, you know, the big being theory or the big being idea, right? And I think a lot of Scientologists probably have the idea that they're could be some sort of a creator, or that we all came from someplace, because the Scientology cosmology tends to go back to this idea that there's some main body of theta. Okay, so if in Scientology you have a thetan, a spiritual being, you, me, everybody is a thetan, right? And there are individual spiritual beings or units of theta. And at one point, there might have been this main body of theta where we all came from, or a universe of thetans that's not this universe, that's not the physical universe, it's a different universe. Hubbard makes allusions to this. He makes, you know, little comments here and there, but he never really expands on those ideas anywhere. As far as I know, all the way to the top of the bridge, all the information that's in Scientology, he doesn't really expand on that concept any more than to sort of throw out the possibility that there could be a God creator type figure. But Hubbard was much more self-centered than that in terms of his philosophy. And the entire thrust of Scientology is really all about you as a spiritual being and your potentials, your capabilities, your abilities, and restoring those. And ultimately, what he said is that the eighth dynamic will not be understandable or able to be grasped in its fullest sense until a person has moved through and expanded as a being to encompass all of the earlier seven dynamics, which includes spiritual beings, right? The seventh dynamic. So really, he kind of tabled the whole concept of God and said, yeah, it could be, there could be a creator, but it's not really what we're going to get into, and it's not really what Scientology is all about, and you're not going to really get it until you've done all of Scientology. And so that's kind of the philosophical approach he took to God. And as far as all my experience with it goes, that's pretty much everything I can say about Hubbard's stated expression of a God figure. R. Matt, I have a question. Is there anyone anywhere in Scientology who is believed to have some of these powers of the upper OT levels? Obviously, no one is actually running around Clearwater levitating things with their mind, but is there anyone currently in or someone from the past decades who could supposedly do at least something like this? I'm curious because if I were in Scientology being told how amazing Hubbard was, I think I would expect that he would have been exactly the guy to have OT powers if anyone did. Thanks. Okay, here's the thing about OT powers and abilities in Scientology. All Scientologists think that they have OT powers and abilities, and they use confirmation bias to prove that to themselves. Things happen in life. Coincidences occur. Strange coincidences sometimes, right? And after the fact, a Scientologist will sell themselves on the idea that what just happened is something they made happen through their OT powers or abilities. An example might be a person gets on the freeway and he gets this idea that he should go from the fast lane into the slow lane. And then some guy comes barreling down the fast lane and runs into somebody, and it happens right there. And he now attributes that strange feeling that he had to OT powers, this OT perception that he had that something was going to happen. And if he had stayed in that lane, he would have crashed, right? That guy would have crashed into him. And so they attribute that to OT perception. Or, a couple of Scientologists are walking down the street and are suddenly aware of some spiritual being there, a disembodied Thetan, a disembodied spirit, and they decide that they can see this thing or somehow perceive it and tell it to go off and go get a body, and they'll sit there and talk to each other about this and feed each other's beliefs that there's some spiritual being there that they're perceiving, and that it is, somebody who's been stuck there for a century, not going off and getting a body, maybe because they think that they're waiting for Armageddon to happen or something, right? And so they tell the person, hey, go get a body, and then the person zips off, and they sit there and congratulate each other on their OT perceptions. Right, that these things actually happen. These things I'm talking about are examples of what Scientologists do. In Clearwater, I think the biggest example of this is with the weather. They literally told, "Hey, look, a tornado's coming, and we need all the OTs to control the weather to make the tornado move off. And if the tornado moves off, they all give themselves a big pat on the back, right? And if the tornado doesn't move off, well, they didn't postulate it strongly enough. In other words, they didn't intend it. They didn't make it happen. And they were just a little off that day or something, right? They come up with some excuse or whatever for why they couldn't move the tornado off or the hurricane or whatever. Tornado, hurricane, whatever. The weather phenomenon. They couldn't control it that day, right? And this kind of thing goes on. This is what happens, right? When something good happens in Scientology, it goes back to this idea that anything good that happens in your life is a result of Scientology, or is a result of Scientology, whereas anything bad that happens in your life is on you, right? And you must have done something bad or horrible or pulled it in or something like that, right? And so you can always backwards attribute any positive thing in your life to your OT powers or abilities. And that is how Scientologists convince themselves that they have these OT powers and abilities. Because if you told a Scientologist, go win the $1.3 billion California lottery, which just happened, well, I don't think it was a Scientologist who won that. Now, why do you think that is? If Los Angeles has the highest concentration of OTs on the planet, which it does, and if all those OTs are so cause over life and able to make anything happen that they want, then how come one of them didn't win that $1.3 billion lottery in order to give that money to Scientology? Right? It's kind of like, it's the same thing as the psychics winning the lottery. They never do. Or the faith healers going into the hospital in order to cure people. They never do that, because the fact is that those powers don't exist. They are a complete imaginative fabrication on the part of L. Ron Hubbard, who convinces these people that they are somehow superhuman or supernormal. And the fact is, no one has ever demonstrated any OT powers or abilities beyond some subjective reality of their own. It's all in their head, in other words. And I would be the first person in line to see somebody who could actually demonstrate OT powers, and I would validate the hell out of that. I would be the first person saying, oh my God, look at this. This is actually real OT powers and abilities, if they really existed, because I would love nothing more than to be able to levitate things, predict the future, whatever. I'd love to have the force. I think that'd be great. But it doesn't exist. Not in Scientology. And that's really the bottom line on that. Nia Onilla Cat. I was watching Stephen Mango's video about his experience at Celebrity Center International, and I do wonder about the pressure to join the Sea Org that he describes. Are the celebrities and other parishioners under the same pressure to join, or is it some sort of screening process made by the orgs? Also, there's the story of a non-Scientologist who was lured to an org under false pretense. She was told it was a free stand-up comedy show, but when she got there, she was pressured to buy some book. She claims they basically closed the door in front of her and her friend and would not let them go until they had paid or signed up for courses. How can they get away with this? Is this not against the law to physically hold people and force them to buy something they do not want? Thanks for your time. Scientology, by its nature, is a high-pressure, high-control group. And that is manifested in both its recruitment and in its sales. And especially in those two areas are where these really come out. And it gets pretty vicious and pretty high-pressure. With recruitment, you have recruitment to get onto staff, and you have recruitment to get into the Sea Org. Those are two different levels, right? Staff is just staff at a local church. Sea Org is everything. You give up your whole life and you do Scientology flat out. There are requirements or qualifications to be a staff member or to be a Sea Org member. To be in the Sea Org specifically, like for example, you can't have taken LSD. And you can't have a relative who has, you know, security clearances in the government and things. There's various qualifications for it. If you meet those qualifications, they will pursue you ruthlessly and endlessly to join up and be part of that group because they're desperate for members, very desperate. And so those high pressure sales tactics are used extensively on Scientology members to join staff or join the Sea Org. Now, they do not tend to go after celebrities though. Now, Stephen Mango, as an example, was not an example of a celebrity that they would be hands-off about, right? If you've been in a few TV commercials or even in a TV show or something, like low grade, like you're a C-list or, you know, a D-list actor or something, they're going to come after you. They're going to come after you hard. If you're an A-list actor or a B-list actor, you're hands-off. You're not going to be approached to be a member of the C organization because Scientology thinks that you're more valuable as a celebrity by preaching and proselytizing Scientology to the world through your celebrity status, and they'll use you for that. And that's where, you know, Tom Cruise, John Travolta, Kelly Preston, Ann Archer, you know, Erica Christensen, all those actors, they would never want them to be in the C organization, even if they were qualified. Most celebrities aren't, but if they were qualified, they would still not want them to join up because they would want them, you know, out there proselytizing instead. When it comes to the sales tactics, Scientology will go as far as they possibly can to push a person to give as much money as they can, and they'll hit them over and over and over again. They're ruthless. It's like blood in the water. It's just sharks. And that it would be illegal, as far as I understand the law, it would be illegal if they literally locked the door and physically held a person down and prevented them from leaving. But I'm pretty sure from what you're describing here that that's not actually what happened. They can have you can bring a bunch of people into a room and you can sit them down for a seminar and you can lock the door and you can have a guy stand there and look like he's not going to let you out of the room. But if you get up and you walk over to that guy and you say, "You let me out right now," and you're insistent about that, you can get yourself out of there. And there's nothing illegal about what they're doing in the guy standing there, okay, as far as I understand the law. Now, any lawyer out there wants to challenge me about this or clarify this point, I'm wide open for any more information about this, but as I understand it, that's not illegal. Now, if that guy at the door grabs you and puts you down in a chair and says, "You need to listen to this," now we've crossed the line because I understand that to be assault. And they can't be doing that. But I've never seen Scientologists do that. I've seen the standing in front of the door and blocking it and that sort of thing. So like I said, they'll go right up to the edge of what's morally or legally right because of the high-pressure sales tactics. But I've not seen them cross that line too much where they physically are you know, holding a person down or something. I've never seen that. But you can get the idea psychologically that you're imprisoned or that you're being held against your will or something. But that's not legally the same thing as actually physically being held against your will. Because if you stood there and demanded that this person let you out, you know, they're going to let you out. And so, of course, my advice with this is if you ever find yourself in a high-pressure sales situation like that, you stand there and you demand 100% that you be let out and you not cooperate in any way, shape, or form with what's happening. And in fact, you could always pull out your phone and call 911 or, you know, call a friend or something like that in order to get assistance. And that will usually get the guy out of your way so you can then go, right? So that's my general advice in that kind of a situation. High tone. Does Scientology reject Darwin's theory of evolution? What would a Scientologist be instructed to teach their children about the origins of human and animal life? I know about the Xenu story, but what are the people who haven't reached OT3 allowed to accept in science? Hubbard actually changed his tune over the years, so there's actually two answers to this question. Initially, Hubbard talked about and accepted Darwin's theory of evolution, and in a book in 1952 called History of Man, he talked about incidents, you know, that people could remember from millions and millions of years ago of evolutionary progress on this planet where you know, there was a spiritual memory line of the evolution of bodies on Earth, right? Going back to clams and mollusks and sloths and he even talked about the Piltdown Man, right? Which of course was, the Piltdown Man was an archaeological find, which was proven to be a hoax within, you know, a year of it being talked about. But Hubbard wrote about it as though it was fact, because when it was discovered, it was thought that this was a factual archaeological discovery. So he immediately grabbed this up and said that this was a valid memory that people were having from millions of years ago. And then it's all a hoax, right? And as far as I know, the Piltdown Man is still in the History of Man book that Scientology publishes to this day. So, you know, yeah, Hubbard was following along with evolution. But in the mid-60s, during a series of lectures that he gave at St. Hill Manor in England, called the St. Hill Special Briefing Course. This is a very, you know, hundreds of lectures that he took, you know, years to give. He was teaching this course, and during this course, he said that evolution was an implant, and that all the stuff that had been covered before about evolution and all of the stuff about history and all that stuff, that people thought was real was totally nonsense and not true at all, and was all this, you know, implanted material from millions of years ago that was put into our heads against our will, using a lot of pain and electronics and various things in order to control man, and that evolution had not actually happened and Darwin had it all wrong. So, you know, he, like I said, he changed his tune on that. So, you know, as to what Scientologists aren't told to tell their children anything. What individual Scientologists do with the information Hubbard gives them depends on how much information they study from Hubbard. Like, for example, I was in Scientology for 20 years before I came across that lecture on the briefing course about the fact that evolution was all an implant. Up until I read that, I thought evolution was real according to L. Ron Hubbard and according to History of Man. And I think you'll find most Scientologists think that. But if they've been exposed to this, you know, this material on the briefing course, which very few Scientologists have just because they don't take the time to go through hundreds of lectures from Hubbard. But if they do, then they get this information and they go, oh, wow, it's all an implant. Okay, well, I guess none of it's real then. And then they get in this very, like, sort of like I did, kind of, well, what is real and what's not? I guess I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to go up and do the OT levels to figure it all out. And then, of course, you do the OT levels and you get the whole Xenu story, and that just totally rocks your world. And then you're like, you got no idea what real history is anymore. So basically, when it comes to science and history and what Scientologists accept as scientific, fact, they're very confused people. And they've been fed a whole series of very contradictory pieces of information and very, very confused information by L. Ron Hubbard. And so, honestly, I don't think they know which way is up or down. I didn't, as a Scientologist. I was very confused about a number of things when it came to science and history because of L. Ron Hubbard's maunderings on the subject. So, there you go. Flash answers. Jonathan Mark. Scientologists will often use expressions like, "I was so blown out," or "total blowdown." What do these expressions mean? Where do they come from? Two places. One, being totally blown out means you're blown out of your head. As a spiritual person, as a spiritual being, your exterior, you're blown out of your head. You're like, woohoo! And then in terms of a blowdown, that's actually something that happens on the E-meter. When there's a sudden release of charge, there's a dial on the meter that goes down, and that's called a blowdown. And it indicates that the person has had a huge release of emotional trauma or spiritual trauma. Chris Wood. Greetings, Mr. Shelton. What type of an impact do you think Scientology's outspoken critics are having overall? In previous videos, you have mentioned that Scientology is coming apart at the seams and is facing internal strife. Is it safe to assume that the Scientology apparatus, as it is, will collapse in the coming years? We're having a huge impact overall and have, it's been a snowball effect over years. It's not a viral overnight sensation. It is a snowball effect. It builds one on the other on the other. And it has been all of the critics over all of these years that have been having this effect that have built up to Alex Gibney's Going Clear documentary and the huge wave of anti-Scientology media that we're now seeing. And yes, I do believe that Scientology's life, his years are numbered because it is collapsing and it can't really go on forever the way that it's going. Dav Crook. Hello, Chris. You do a great job producing this channel. Thank you. Please explain why all victims of David Miscavige's physical abuse aren't pursued with the authorities for criminal prosecution. It seems to me his arrest would spell the end of his reign. Okay, three words. Statute of limitations. Assault and battery is something that can only be charged for a number of years. And once that statute of limitations is up, you can't bring charges against a person for that. And I don't believe the statute of limitations is very long for that. For that offense. Joe Paydar, do you think Miscavige watches any of your videos? Well, we can always hope, but honestly, no. I don't think David Miscavige ever watches any of my videos. All right, and so we have come to the end of another episode, and thank you very much for watching. I really appreciate you guys coming around and listening to what I have to say here and some of my ridiculous nonsense about Scientology. If you have any questions or comments at all, leave them in the comments section of my Q&A videos. I do see all of them, and I try to take up, as many as I can here as we're going. Somebody asked me why I don't do longer episodes, and it's because I think half an hour is enough of me answering questions on a weekly basis. If I tried to make them longer, I think I would lose audience members, actually, because I just think it'd be too much. So that's why I keep it to this time frame. So I hope to hear from you guys soon and have a great week.